Hello, and welcome to another edition of University of Registrars Talking About Stuff. This one is episode 25, bit of a landmark that, and features our first international guest on University of Registrars Talking About Stuff. Asa Hämäläinen is Director of Administration at the University of Helsinki and also Chair of a notable European Higher Education Association, HUMAIN, the Heads of University Management and Administration Network in Europe. We learn about Asa's background in several Finnish universities and in a student union, including work on research policy, organisational development, as well as in central administration, before ending up as the equivalent of a registrar at Helsinki, a position he's held for the past 10 years. Helsinki has historically enjoyed considerable autonomy, but universities in Finland now are even more autonomous than a decade or so ago, including in terms of finances, senior appointments, and governing body membership decisions. Asa describes his university, which is the oldest in Finland, established in 1640 in the city of Turku, which was at that time part of the Swedish Empire. It moved to its current location almost two centuries ago and is now a large comprehensive university. According to Asa, the university has important commercial activities, most significantly a national university pharmacy chain established in the 19th century. We also discuss the structure of the higher education system in the country, engagement with government and politicians and their priorities for higher education. Unsurprisingly, the COVID response has taken up much of Asa's time over the past year, with many of the issues being common to universities across the country and shared with the UK experience. Helsinki was reasonably well prepared in terms of its digital activity, according to Asa, but still faces significant challenges in terms of student and staff well-being. We talk through the likely changes to professional services working patterns in the post-pandemic environment and planning for the future landscape and new agile work and delivery models. Finally, considering the post-Brexit position, we hear about the role of HUMAIN in terms of professional networking, residential schools and seminars, and developing and supporting professional services leaders and aspiring leaders. Asa stresses the value of the organisation in helping members learn from each other, build their own networks, and identify new areas for collaboration, among other benefits. I hope you enjoy it. Right, well, welcome to another edition of University Registrars Talking About Stuff. And this time, it's my enormous pleasure to welcome my first ever international guest to the podcast, Asa Hämäläinen from Helsinki University. Welcome, Asa. It's really good to be talking to you.
Thank you, Paul. It's really great to be with you.
And I want to ask you a few questions about you, but also about the university and indeed about Finland, because I'm conscious I'm, you know, pretty ignorant, never having sadly been there yet. But also, I think, you know, a lot of listeners will not know very much about Finland. But first of all, about you, you've been director of administration at Helsinki for a decade, I think. How did you end up there? Because you graduated from the university, didn't you, a long time ago? Yeah. Sorry, maybe not that long ago, but a while ago anyway. Yeah. So how did you end up from graduation to being director of administration? What was the journey?
Okay, so let's first start. I've now been in this role about 10 years, so a decade. Yes, that's true. Before I was in another university, it was a university of performing arts, and I did also this register kind of role there for 4 years. So altogether already now 14. So of course you can count, and it's true, I've been there already for some time. So actually I've graduated from the University of Helsinki, but I've actually studied also in Germany for quite some time, 3 years I think altogether. After my graduation, honestly, before the graduation already, I started to work in the Helsinki Students Union. So I've been kind of employed. I got real salary from them already in the 80s, and from there, then I moved to work in a University of Art and Design, and then at that time I also graduated. And so I was working first in student politics and then educational policy. Then I moved to research policy. The University of Helsinki then wanted to or recruited me back from the Art and Design School to support our first ever research assessment exercise. I know that, of course, those are things that really well, everyone's a little bit worried when you start to talk about resource assessment, but we did actually follow the British formula a little bit, but did it only within the institution at that time then. Wow. And so I started with research policy in Helsinki, and then I moved on to organizational development, service development, and central administrative services, and from there then to this role of kind of what you would be probably in UK a registrar role in Helsinki.
So which is, you know, a really interesting and diverse set of roles in higher education. Mm-hmm. So what is your actual job within Helsinki then? So what does the role of director of administration embrace?
Yeah. So I'm first of all, I'm the secretary general for our university board. In Finland, the university board, it meets roughly perhaps 10 times a year, and it approves our accounts and budgets, and then also the strategy of the University of Helsinki. And as we work in a kind of a what you say group structure, so there's Helsinki group, basically Helsinki University group, so it's also the board of the businesses that we run. At the same time, then, I'm part of the university leadership, so I'm the only non-academic there. So there's a rector in our terms, 3 to 4 vice rectors, depending on the situation. And then there's me, and we are basically then the university leadership in our case. Directly, then, I run the university services. It's a entity of about 1,000 employees, and they provide the services to all the faculties and also the central services. So all the local and central services report basically to me in this regard. Yeah, perhaps I don't know.
And you report to the rector directly. Do you? And are they appointed by the university itself, or are they appointed by, you know, the board or the government, or how does the rector get in post?
Yes, so in Finland it's actually so that the universities are autonomous by law, and it's actually even in the constitution the freedom of research is guaranteed. 2010 we were detached from state. Before that we were kind of state agencies, and nowadays it's so that we have a kind of a board, university board, which has approximately depending from university, one third, a minimum is I think 40% have to be external members, and then the rest are internal. So it's a mixture of internal and external people who run or make the decisions at the university level, but we recruit all of them ourselves. So the ministry does not appoint anyone to the University of Helsinki. The board then appoints the rector and the vice rector, and actually also me. For registrars or directors of administration, in my case, they do it for life, and the others are then for 5 years maximum is always the period of nomination. But since 2010, not all of the universities in Finland have this role. So we are perhaps 4 or 5 universities which still have this one person who's in charge of most of the administration.
Right. Excellent. And Helsinki itself, it's the oldest university in Finland. Is that right?
True. Yep. We 1640. Yep.
Yeah. And so what? How big is it? How, you know, what's, how's it organized? What are the big disciplines?
Yeah. So we are a comprehensive university, with the exception that we don't have engineering and we don't have business administration. So otherwise we cover everything from theology to veterinary medicine, of course law and education and humanities and science and so on, medicine being of course a big part of it. So we were established 1640, and actually not in Helsinki, because at that time the capital of Finnish area that was part of Sweden was actually in Turku, and so we moved about 280 years ago, or almost 200 years ago, from Turku to Helsinki, when the capital was moved also from to where it is now. So we have an interesting history in that regard. We were actually a Swedish-speaking university, so we were established by the Swedish queen. She was at that time, I think, 6 years old, so obviously she had good advice. We were the third oldest or fourth oldest university in the Swedish territory at that time. So nowadays we have a faculty structure still ongoing. So we are traditional, kind of German tradition-based university in structure in that sense. But we have abolished now the department level. So basically have faculties, and then under them we have a how would you describe? We have degree curriculum and degree structure that overlaps the faculty structure. So it's not identical anymore.
Yeah.
And then there are big research centers and research networks and different kind of layers where then the research is directed and also conducted and locally.
And in terms of kind of student body, because how big is the student body?
Yeah. So we have about 30,000 students. This is now the degree students. So then, of course, there come the, where in Finland, the open university is also part of our businesses, as well as kind of training post-degree skills. This we run in a company form, this the latter. But so we are about 30,000 degree-seeking students. It may be 32, depending, of course, on how do you count. In Finland, the situation is quite different from UK. So if we put it to full-time equivalents, because most of the students work and study at the same time, so if you put them in full-time equivalents, I think it's about 24,000-25,000 students. Staff members, we have 8,000 in the university, and then when we take the university group, that's about 10,000.
And how many of those students are Finnish, and how many of them are international?
Oh gosh, I should know.
Roughly, right? You don't.
But let's make it roughly. I think that it could be around perhaps 10% of the students would be external. From the academic staff, it's 26%, I think, currently. But in the students, it's different.
Okay, and what I am asking you this because I just don't know, and I'm just really interested to what. In terms of the financial, what are the income streams? Is there a lot of it from government? Is it from your commercial activities or from student fees?
Yeah. So we are not actually taking any tuition fees in Finland, and that's probably also why we don't, we have not been there, or we did not take any tuition fees. From Finns and Europeans or European Union members, we are not allowed to take, and then from non-EU students nowadays, since 5 years, we have to take some sort of fee. So tuition fees are not really a income stream for us, but it's so that the state gives us the block grant. We negotiate, we have a negotiation always for 4 year period, and then they give us the money based on the negotiations and based on the outcome, how the university has fared with given criteria, mainly, of course, completed degrees and articles, but also external funding. About 40% of our income, or 60%, comes now from state, and then roughly 40% comes from completed research funding. Academy of Finland being, of course, the biggest one, but we have been quite successful also in the EU funding. I think we are close to 100 ERC grants, I think. It may be that we've already exceeded the number of 100 ERC grants in my university. So then the commercial activities in our case, they are often so that we do not have student accommodation and things like that you would have in a British university probably. But we do then sell services to companies or then to private sector in general, and then of course that is done so that you do get a small profit, but not really a big one. The biggest asset for us is commercial activity that we run a pharmacy chain in Finland, and we've got I think 17 pharmacies that we own, and the profit from there comes then to our private funds, which we then use to support the university.
How did you end up in that position? Did it come out of your pharmacy school? I mean, that's really fascinating. And what are they are they called, University of Helsinki pharmacies?
Or are they... Well, they are called University Pharmacy because at that time when they were started, there were no other universities in the country, and the name is still the same. So so it's an old privilege of the university. In the old time, of course, the universities had a lot of privileges from the monarchs. And this has been with us from mid 19th century. Now, of course, in Finland, the pharmacy business is highly regulated. So normally, typically, they are individuals who run a pharmacy, and then the university pharmacy is basically the only chain in the country. It's about 10% of the market sale currently that we have.
Absolutely fascinating, right? It's amazing what you learn. So can I ask you then about the rest of the Finnish higher education system? Sure. So how many, you know, universities are there? Is there a kind of two-tier structure to the other colleges? How is it structured?
Yeah, okay. So we are currently, I think you could say that we are 13 universities. We used to be around 22, and there have been some mergers. The most recent one of the mergers was two universities in Tampere, so Tampere University and Tampere University of Technology merged a couple of years ago, and that's the most recent one. So we have universities, and then in addition we have universities of applied sciences. So there are kind of two pillars basically in the higher education system in Finland. It's the old system in that sense that you had in UK, because of course now you don't make this distinction anymore. In our case, we still do, like in most of the continental Europe, you also do. It's so that the way we recruit the students is also quite different, because we have we take from, for example, in my university only one in seven applicants in of so we have a lot of candidates who want to come and study with us, and then we have harsh selections who we then actually take, and that's one of course it varies. If you want to study psychology or English language, we take perhaps 2-3% of the applicants, and then if you want to study theology, then it's let's say a little
anyone gets it.
Percentage. No, well, not really anyone, but let's say it's considerably easier. Our basic degree is a master's degree, so normally when the student, even though we have Bologna structure, most of the students when they enter, they come actually to study the full degree. And that's also one of the reasons why we have been perhaps slow in the international market, because now only currently we have typically the system where we take international students to our master's degrees. So now of our master's programs, I think 50 of them are run in three languages. So my university is actually officially bilingual, Swedish and Finnish, but in practice it's trilingual, and sometimes it's we only use English depending on where you are at the university.
Oh, fantastic. You mentioned before about the level of autonomy that the university now enjoys, but what is the relationship, what relationship do you have with government? I mean, with a small number of institutions, in terms of the population size of Finland, you're relatively small. So how close are you to government? I mean, I think you've had visitors from government in your university today. I mean, is that happening all the time? Do you speak to them regularly?
Well, yes and no. Of course, it's the one of the benefits of a smaller country that there is easier access also to major politicians. We do, of course, do a lot of lobbying also, because nowadays the politicians and politics in general is quite interested in higher education, and it's the question of attainability and the question of value for money, and it's also in the case of Finland also the question of regional policy. So how well covered is the big country in terms of higher education institutions as what we offer to young generation. So in that sense, there is a huge need to a dialogue between the politicians and then the university leadership. So the official way for us to negotiate is that typically when we get elections, then there's 4-year government in the country, and then in the first or second year comes then the negotiations with the university in what is expected from us, and then we negotiate for targets and for our strategy for the consecutive 4 years, and then there's a kind of a intermediate inspection of what actually came out of it and so on. So then we have a resource allocation model. So we don't have separate research grant block and educational block, but we've got a kind of one block that we get, block grant that we get from the government, and there is in this allocation model there's a mathematical formula where you count then the completed degrees and completed degrees in the norm time, or whether it's kind of the students have been studying longer, and then you count the articles based on the level of the articles and so on. So there is a kind of a formula, but then at the same time the politicians have been interested in steering the system, I would say much more now than in a decade before, and that has been, well, that's been the case I think everywhere in Europe.
Yeah.
And of course know that in UK that has been quite a big issue also.
So I just on that final point then, the mm-hmm. you know, how much direction are they starting to, they are starting to exert more direction. So what areas are they focusing on? Are they trying to make you focus more on, you know, students doing science subjects or research in, you know, technology or cyber security? Mm-hmm. How are they trying, what are they directing you towards?
Yeah. Well, first of all, as we are autonomous, we were actually quite autonomous also before 2010, because we even that time appointed all of our kind of leadership on our own. But now we are financially quite autonomous. When it comes to staffing, we are autonomous. When it comes to structures, we are quite autonomous. But when it comes to which degrees we are allowed to give, then we are not that autonomous. That's basically something where we need a permit from the ministry. If we would want to introduce now engineering, for example, we would not be able to do it without them accepting it and decreeing that in the government. Then, of course, if you have the money, you always have the power. It's only the question of how much you want to use that power and which mechanisms are kind of apt ones. Let's put it that way. Many of the ways that we've done it before is that we negotiate actually not with the politicians, but with the senior staff members of the Ministry of Education.
Yeah.
So basically, they are the spokespersons. So that was the way that it used to be run, and nowadays the politics has gone so that politicians want to be included before then the ministerial people say to us what they want and so on. So that's one of the mechanisms. Areas, then permanent and long-term funding is turned into project funding. That's of course one way of reaching more kind of steering power. And then when you have the external funding source and competed research funding, of course, then the question is how much do you actually steer then the funding agency and what are the, those mechanisms? What they are interested currently is there are basically two big goals that the government and actually the parliament has set. So it's not even a governmental agreement. It's it covers, we have a kind of a multi-party system in Finland, so it covers all the major parties in Finland who've agreed on certain targets. One of them is that they want to raise the number who gets higher education degree in the country. We have been in OECD statistics on the top in the 80s and 90s, and perhaps still in the early 2000s, but not anymore. We are in the mid, there in the mid-size, and then we had made that leap to this 40% getting higher education degree quite early, and then it has been stable, and now they want to raise it. So there's this big issue of not having money and yet wanting to get more degrees, and how do you actually reach that? Then, of course, there's the question of in which fields you want them to be the new graduates. So how much of them have to be engineers, and how many in business administration, or whether you need more doctors and so on. So there's kind of this negotiation going on. Then, as the current government is a kind of social democratic run government, or they are the prime minister party, so it means that for them the social justice and then the attainability issues are important. So how do you actually guarantee that also the minorities have the chance to get into higher education? Yeah. That's a big issue for them. Right. And then, of course, in research, then it's not in the formula as such. It's much more than through the funding agencies that they steer what kind of research is then needed in the country.
Great. Moving on then, thinking about the environment that we're currently in terms of COVID-19 and the impact that's had on higher education and indeed, you know, society across the planet. How has that been felt in universities in Finland then? I mean, has everyone been remote learning throughout that time? Mm-hmm. Have you all been working away from the university? Has there been activity on campus or not much? How has it played out over the past year?
All the Finnish universities are basically in remote education mode. Not completely, obviously, because if you want to teach and study and learn skills, for example, to become a doctor, you have to see patients and so on. So there are, of course, areas, or if you want to become study chemistry and so you have to also be able to do something with the glass tubes and all the different materials that you deal with in chemistry, so or the elements and so on. So basically, we have perhaps 1/5 of the educational offer currently is on site with students wearing masks, and also teachers wearing masks when they go there. All the university premises are closed, so that there's normally we have open doors so that they are a public space, basically the university premises, so you are allowed to enter. So now we've closed all the doors so that only those who have a course and need to go into the building, then they go there, the rest can't come. Staff members, it's so that everyone who can is now basically working from home, and then those who need to be in the facilities, then they can be there, but they need to announce it in advance. Basically, right. That's the rule how we work with this. I've run now the crisis management team since February, basically in my university, and of course the first time that you have to take the leap in 1-2 days, you move everything remote. That was a little bit kind of a difficult and catastrophic. Then on the other hand, we had quite good preparedness actually at the university, because we had been investing a lot in digitalization and also in different kinds of digital educational support to teachers also. So moving to this, certainly it was a big issue to teachers and students, but it was not so that it would have been technically impossible, or so that, so it's rather a question of pedagogics. And then now we are tackling, like I think most of us, with the question that as this goes on and on and on, how do you keep motivated? And then the big issue, what has come and what's happening with the students who've never been in the university premises at all, and they've already studied now for for more than half a year. So there's this question of well-being, being integrated, and those are kind of issues that we try to tackle now.
What do you think that the way that the university operates will change in the light of the experience that you've had? I mean, particularly in terms of, you know, the administration and the way in which people work, will we see much more, you know, flexible, agile working and more sure. meetings happening online?
Yeah. We've made actually during this crisis twice now a staff survey on well-being and working under the COVID situation. And first of all, you saw that for teaching staff, the situation, if we count total lockdown that we had for 3 weeks, I think in March, since then we've been in this mode where it's kind of a, depending on what you do, whether you go to the university. So you see that the teachers do not value so much this new situation, because there's of course this jump into this digital world, and then you don't feel that you get the connection to a big classroom or students and so on. So they are kind of a little bit suffering, but still have been quite, let's say, not too dissatisfied. And there have also been good examples and people being enthusiastic about now we can also do new hybrid models and so on. So there's kind of a learning curve that's going on at the same time. For the rest of the staff, so our services and professionals, it's different. They earlier always wanted to work more from home, and then we did not allow because there was this idea that everyone's on place and then actually you need someone also to be there in person. Now, both the students and professors have learned to get the services and enjoy the services also digitally. And then in our surveys, then the professional service people, they have been quite satisfied with the new flexibility then that this has guaranteed. Yeah. We are located on 4 campuses. Actually, I did not mention that before. So in city center, we have 1, and then we have 3 other campuses in Helsinki. So we had, of course, a lot of meetings where we were moving from campus to a campus and so on. So obviously, if I now say, immediate reaction is that we will never return to a situation where people have to move from one, everyone to come to one campus for a meeting in a way. So there are kind of immediate things you see that are changing. Then we had in the summer and over the summer, we had a post-COVID group where we've invited some people, and it was led by one of our vice rectors. They were kind of trying to screen what is the situation and what is the world going forward, where are we going forward, and what are the future challenges. And basically, they were taking the first steps to they were not defining the solutions, but basically painting the landscape, the future landscape, and the future expectations at the same time, so that it would be easier to start to plan the new norm, what it will look like. And now, of course, the idea at that time was that in the autumn we will be back at the university and we won't have the second wave, and then we can actually discuss this in peace and so on. But of course, now that we are still in this on the second wave, so we have not yet made definite kind of decisions there. A big issue is, of course, the use of facilities, how it's changing at the same time. There's, of course, this big debate, like everywhere, that the humanities and so on, they want to have everyone their own office, and then the university can't afford it. And there've been these open offices, and what's the new word for this multi-purpose spaces that universities have been kind of doing. that's been kind of a big issue, and it's been going forward. And now, of course, the question is that if people will not return, or they return only sometimes, and then during the day you will have a lot of remote meetings also. Though actually the old way or the new way is now the old new way, and now the new way has to be invented at some point. So there's a huge question there that we are discussing currently.
And I mean, I think everyone is grappling with these difficult issues about what the new model will actually look like. One final thing I just wanted to touch on before we end this, ASO, is that the UK sadly has drawn itself back from Europe, which is deeply concerning to those of us who work in higher education. But you are chair of a European wide organisation of heads of university administration, Humane, which is an organisation I'm very proud to be a part of as well. I mean, say a bit about how you see that organisation, how it fits into the higher education landscape in Europe, because it's one of those groups that not that many people may have heard of, but I regard it as a really important grouping.
Yeah, thank you for the question, Paul. And of course, those of your listeners who do not know, you are also actively involved, and I'm quite happy, and I know that many European colleagues also appreciate your contributions. So we have been a kind of a members association, and then we've been gradually strengthening basically our capacity to provide professional networking experiences in residential schools and in seminars, and so that we would get not only the top layer of the higher education institutions, but also the second level, or the level right below, to interact in European and in global level more. Because it's not only the challenges that we all of us face, but it's also the nature of higher education, how it's developing, and where you see that the future lies, that there will be even more interaction between different countries and different higher education systems and different institutions and so on. So it's not in that sense limited by no means to the European Union, or then now that we have these fancy European university networks and so on. It's basically an idea to provide a platform where people can come and meet and learn from each other, benchmarking and building a network so that you will also then be able to support your own university when they are kind of in new situations. And at the same time, perhaps you also learn yourself something and advance your own career. So hopefully many of the listeners also will join us.
Let's hope so. That's fantastic. I mean, it is a terrific organisation, and I commend it to anyone listening. ASO, thank you so much for your time. It's been an absolute joy talking to you, and lovely to hear about Helsinki and Finnish higher education and your experience and career. And I really do value the time, so thank you so much.
Thank you, Paul. It was really a great time that we spent together.
That's all then from University Registrars talking about stuff this time. There'll be plenty more along in due course, and if you can't wait, then please do check out the Registrarism blog on wonky.com, where you'll find lots of higher education comment and fun and games. Until next time.